Hello and welcome once again to another episode of Core Ideas, the podcast where we delve into anything and everything related to lake sediments. As always, we are your co-hosts, myself, Adam Jeziorski.
And Josh Theenpont. Thanks for coming back again.
All right. So what do you want to talk about today, Josh?
Oh, I don't know. We're running to the end of our list of contagious ideas topics. Like, what do we have left to talk about?
I don't know. We've done writing manuscripts, citations, open access, the environmental movement.
I think we also polled the listeners. We didn't put a poll out on social media, on Twitter, to see what our future episodes could have been. We should have done that. We should actually use our Twitter account a lot more in hindsight.
Yeah, something is criminally underused. You know what? In terms of contagious ideas, we could kind of explore social media itself and the way it propagates science, amongst other things.
That's a good idea. Let's do that.
All right. So, you know, as our own contagious idea arc continues to go viral, the next episode could be about embracing that meta-narrative and delve into the love-hate relationship that we have, or that social media has, between with science.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it social media encompasses every aspect of life that people are living in the modern world, the modern connected world. And science is no exception to that. It's become pretty quickly entrenched into the way in which we, carry out science communication at a level of just passing around some of the articles that we've talked about in the last episode when we were thinking about open access data, but also the way in which we publicize our science. So going back to the science in the news kind of angle, there really is a linkage for a lot of the stuff we've talked about in this arc in using social media if you choose to do so. And that's one of the things that makes it maybe a little bit different, is that it's not part of the publication process or any of that. It's completely ancillary to that, but it's becoming really, really important in a lot of ways. So that makes it an interesting topic.
And it's also an interesting topic that we really don't know very much about, because we have vast, and by vast, I mean virtually no social media presence in terms of the show.
Both in terms of the show, but even compared to some people in a personal setting. So I would say that this is a topic that when I'm talking about, I really don't have a strong background of utilizing it for science communication, only at a very superficial kind of level. But it's something that I think about a lot, because I use these platforms. So I see people who are doing it really, really well, and that makes it an interesting thing to think about.
And so we may not know much about it, but as scientists, we know how to do research. So how about we look into this a little bit?
Let's do it. We should just record one of our planning sessions. This is starting to sound like a planning session more. So the way in which we record these things is we record every other week, and then we still talk on the weeks in between. And this is often how the planning sessions sort of go. Like, what do we want to talk about? Maybe this will fit nicely into that arc. This is starting to sound like a recorded planning session, which in some ways it kind of is. It's sort of getting our thinking around social media, and we really are exploring the topic a little bit.
So we can double it up. We could use this planning session as an episode.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right. Content production doubled. But on a more serious note, like at this point, social media, I think we're well beyond the highlight idea of it being a fad. There are billions of people connected. Facebook is far from the first social media. I don't even know what would get the first nod. Like,
I don't know.
Something before MySpace, or my Friendster, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Facebook itself is like 15 years old now, more than that. 2004, 5?
2004, yeah, 16 years.
And owns a significant chunk of the wealth of the planet.
And some of the other social media platforms, they are all under the umbrella of this company. So has a huge influence on the world.
Huge influence. I personally don't have very much of a Facebook presence. It was never my thing. And then, you know, when the news of Cambridge Analytica broke, I'm like, that's it. I'm out. I'm still on there, but on the off chance that I want to connect to someone from my past that only uses Facebook, but that's about it.
Yeah.
So that writes off the biggest social media platform for us. Let's go down the list a little bit.
Yeah. So when did you have a Facebook account really early in the history of the platform?
Yeah. Like sometime in 06, probably I would have gotten it.
Yeah. I had some students come to my office who were in one of my other classes, and they were doing a survey of faculty and their use of social media for one of their other courses. So I sat down with them and started talking about this. And I'm one of the younger faculty amongst my colleagues, and mentioned to them that I had a Facebook account in 2004, like right after it came out, like right after it went beyond the single network to different universities. And they looked at me like I was literally from outer space. To say that, like, yeah, you had to be a university student. You had to be a Queen's student to be part of the Queen's network, et cetera. Yeah, so I've had it for a long time, even though I don't use it really much more beyond looking at dog photos of Tyga's daycare when she goes.
No, I remember it being a thing when it was still exclusive, like knowing of it before I was on it. But yeah, that's about it.
So that writes that one off.
Yeah, the whole buying and selling elections. You know, I think of it as a home of anti-vaxxers, people protesting masks, flat earthers, all sorts of conspiracy theories. And
yeah, and your aunts and yeah. uncles and that sort of thing.
And how does science compete with all that kind of juicy stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's a science component of it, but it really isn't the dominant one that science is linked into, even though it really would be. Well, not that people who hold those kind of views necessarily accept data as a way of changing their opinions, but it would be a good place for science to push back against some of the crazy ideas out there in the world. But it's not a common one, at least that I'm aware of.
No, I can't. I guess it depends on, you know, if you get your news from Facebook, maybe there's the science-y stuff emerges a bit. But if you pull up a list of like the most popular social networks, and you know, it's not super obvious straight off the bat which ones where science would have a big presence.
Yeah.
Because you got Facebook is the obvious number one, because it's like some huge proportion of the planet. I'm not looking at list in order here, but then, you know, you have YouTube, which I don't really think of as a social media network, but
yeah, that's one that I think about a little bit, because I do obviously make a lot of videos for work related stuff, whether it's teaching or some research. And I never really think of it that way either. Like, I think of YouTube as a place you go to find a video when you need to figure out how to work something, or you want a review of some product, or you want, you know, to see a cool video of something you're going to use in your teaching. But there is a ton of commenting on YouTube videos that I guess qualifies as social media. And by that account, it's the second biggest platform of all of them right after Facebook. Now, that being said,
a lot of those comments are horrible.
It's a dumpster fire, yeah. Like truly is a dumpster fire, even more so than the groups on Facebook. Like, it's horrible, absolutely. But it is a platform in the same way that some of these other ones are. But I would imagine that the people, I don't know, I would want to think that the comments, the people who are using that commenting as a way of their social media, are a pretty insular group, like some of the more fringe social media platforms. It's not as broad scale or widespread. And the people who are using it for viewing videos are probably using it more in the way that I'm thinking, but I may be incorrect there.
Yeah.
But it is one, I guess.
YouTube isn't something where necessarily comes to you, to me through a feed. I don't really use it in terms of subscriptions or anything. My whole YouTube experience is I'm looking for something as opposed to having a feed.
One of the things I find interesting about YouTube that I've only noticed fairly recently is I tend to access YouTube through a computer, like through a Windows-based computer. But if you look at it on a mobile browser, you get a very different experience. You get comments by the people who are making the videos, the content creators, are commenting in the same way that they would on their Twitter feed or their Instagram feed. So it looks different, and it may actually be the way in which you access YouTube that hides some of those features.
Okay. So yeah, so in terms of, you know, networks where you have access with quote unquote content creators or scientists, like the one that stands out to me then would be either Twitter, which I definitely use a little bit, and science Twitter is definitely a thing. I'm not sure if science Instagram is a thing. That'd be another one that would lend itself to direct interactions and publicizing. Reddit, I think of more of as a, in the more of a news feed, and I guess is a huge interaction element to it through all the comments, but it's not not as much, you know, it's just someone posts a thing. It's not where you'd actually necessarily have any interaction with the person that generated the thing as much as the person. There's like a, I don't know, there's an anonymity layer there that is at play.
Yeah, I don't, am not a regular user of Reddit. I tend to look in on the what are they called? Boards?
Subreddits. What's
the term for it? Subreddits for the different universities. So more, and in that case, it's a lot of question and answer. So people have questions about procedures at the university, and other students or some faculty will post answers. So I think of it more as like a frequently asked questions. That's how I use, well, how I view Reddit. I think I've never actually posted.
Yeah, no, I've absolutely never posted anything, but I do use it. I use that to keep track of like my hobby-esque things as opposed to interact with anybody. And what else? There are things like TikTok, and there are apparently some absolutely colossal social networks based in China that I've never heard of that, you know, is obviously catering to that 1.5 billion people or so that I have.
Yeah. And they may be carrying out a fairly similar function to something we've already talked about, like a Twitter version in that location where they may not have access to Twitter or to Facebook or whatever it is. So they may just not be copies, but be similar styles of programs.
So I think what we're really seeing here, is there anything missing from our list?
There is, of course, Pinterest, which is a great way of pinning images to different topics. You don't have a Pinterest?
I
actually use Pinterest. I wouldn't say a lot. Certainly, it's not something I view every go to every day, but I do collect things on there.
Like what?
As part of the show notes, as a way of drawing your attention to the show notes on the website, we'll pin or we'll put a link to my board that I collect knots on, or I collect pictures of knots that you can learn to tie. They often have the instructions of how to tie them. So that'll be something to find.
That's something we should throw in, you know, like our intro to grad studies one. You should have brought that up earlier.
Well, we talked about it in the field ones. Yeah,
that's what it was.
Field work.
Okay.
There is actually, I'm not sure if there is a bow line on there because I can tie that one with my eyes closed, but I'm sure somewhere there's these are the 15 knots you need to know how to tie kind of thing. Okay. But beyond that, no, I don't use that. Oh, I guess LinkedIn is one that we haven't mentioned yet. And that's it's very different. I have a LinkedIn profile, but it's not one that I access or really
I associate that one with professional development type stuff is what's being passed around there, less so than maybe there is a science component to LinkedIn, but I'm totally unaware of it. So I
think maybe different sectors use it more, you know, the private sector perhaps uses it more than the academia.
But I definitely think there's a lot of stratification across these networks, both by demographics and also by purpose. And I think, you know, taking the conversation further, kind of really the one that stands out to me is very much Twitter in terms of a means of disseminating science.
Absolutely.
You're following specific people and those people are broadcasting stuff to you, but it's links to other things more so than pages and groups within it. It's very much a way to go, here's a paper or a study or a photograph or whatever, and then getting, you know, people to share it and comment on it. And without it having to be in video form, for example, with YouTube, or necessarily tied to an individual person in the way some of the other ones are.
Mm-hmm. And sharing not only your own content, but other people's content. You know, on YouTube, if you are preparing a video to share, you've made that, you're going to share it. On Instagram, if you're taking a picture, it's probably your photo. But it's very easy to share the link to, hey, here's this great paper that I found on the topic I'm interested in. Share that with my my followers and all their followers if they choose to like it or to retweet it. So it's a way of sharing content much more quickly in some ways, but also sharing content that's not of your own generation and just putting that information out there. And so I guess we'll focus in on that. For one, it's the only social media that the Core Ideas podcast subscribes to. We don't have an Instagram or a Facebook page. So if we are to, you know, try and help ourselves in this discussion, we should probably focus on our Twitter account and things that we can learn from, really from other people who do Twitter really well from a SciComm perspective or just a science perspective in order to maybe up our game a little bit.
Yeah. So I remember, and I have no idea where the link to this would be, but I read something like a year ago, year and a half ago or something about, you know, to have any kind of scientific impact about on Twitter and breaking out of your own personal bubble so you're not just memeing to the choir. You had to like grow your network to over 1,000 followers, basically. And that makes a lot of sense to me. I have no idea how they came to that conclusion, but that idea of, you know, by the time you reach 1,000, you're well beyond people you know.
Yeah, for sure. So as we record this on the 20th of July, we have 77 followers. So we have some work. We have some work we need to do here.
This might not be the best idea for an episode where we try and talk authoritatively about how to use social media and science.
And I personally have 378 followers. So, and Adam has 121. So,
oh. This is the word of God right here.
Yeah, really. Take this all with a grain of salt, listeners. We probably should have brought on a guest. But anyway, we can glean some things about what we should know from what we don't, and work our way to some of the things that might be useful in this. But I think that's an interesting point, is that, you know, if I look at the followers I have, the vast majority of them are people I know personally or have met personally. There are some exceptions to that, but as a proportion,
they're probably bots.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. As a proportion, I would say more than half of the people I have personally met and know well. And if you want to really break out of that bubble, you do need to increase that number, or that number needs to increase on its own. And some, the ways in which your follower count on social media and Twitter in particular increases is one of those really strange things. There can be this slow, gradual progression, or you have this one tweet that goes super viral or just gets passed around a lot and your follower count exponentially increases overnight. And now you have this huge new following. And it's not something I claim to understand, but it is one of those strange things, is that once you do get that following, whether it's 1,000 people or some number greater than your personal bubble, then how do you go about, you know, utilizing that that platform?
No idea.
Yeah, I don't know either. But I think there are some like best case or, kind of suggestions for things that Twitter can be useful for in that perspective. I'm sure we have maybe one or two listeners, Roberto, who have a few who are close to that number, and maybe he could tweet us and give us some ideas.
Tweet early and tweet often, I think. You know, it's one of those things, you know, you have to be active, which I'm not really. But I also thought it was interesting to like provide some context, kind of like when we did in the citation ones, like look around and get some scale. So like, you know, we have our Paleolimnology podcast with how many followers again?
77.
100?
77.
Okay, 77. So, you know, comparing that to Quirks and Quarks, the Quirks and Quarks Twitter account, which is like the preeminent science show on CBC, for anyone that's not familiar with it. I was actually kind of caught off guard by how few followers it had. It's in the order of about 70,000. And so I guess, you know, when you think of that being one of the biggest shows, again, that stratification of demographics is going in, like, you know, what is the proportion of the population that uses Twitter versus everything else?
So like for context, CBC News, which is the Canadian public broadcaster, has 3 million followers on Twitter. And one of their radio, it's only radio? Yeah, it's a radio show, right?
Yeah.
Is 70,000. So that's a pretty small fraction of 3 million viewers. So that's a pretty niche following, even if it is 70,000 people.
Yeah. Which is crazy to me because it, you know, it has like, you know, in my mind, in many ways, it's a fixture of like weekend CBC, but maybe
it is. Well, it has one of the like coveted time slots. So it's well listened to clearly in their like audio listening perspective. So, you know, the ad buy-in and all those things associated with it on the radio is good, but perhaps not necessarily.
The radio audience people is just fundamentally different than the Twitter audience.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then in the same vein, you know, the Journal of Paleolimnology, I just get an idea of like how many Twitter followers it would have, it'd be 350. And then,
you know. I have more followers than the Journal of Paleolimnology. That's awesome.
And so, and in the same vein, it makes a lot of sense, or at least from my own perspective, because when you think of like, you know, my own, not consumption, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, finding out about new papers, for example. It's not really from journal tweets ever. Like, I subscribe to, like, JOPL and others, so I get, like, their table of contents via email, and I'll scan them when they come in monthly or however often the publication frequency is. But I'm not really perusing their Twitter account to see what's come out. I'll see that more on a direct level from authors or people within that I follow that do retweets, less so than the journal itself.
For sure. And I don't think they are a particularly active tweeting account on Twitter. Their tweets, and I do follow them, I think, are pretty much just that. They're the table of contents from the journal when it comes out regularly. So they're probably, you know, there's a social media coordinator for many of the Springer journals. And so they, when the new article comes out, it's probably automated. That gets put out on the Twitter. They don't necessarily reply regularly to other people who tweet at them, because I think I have tweeted at them maybe when we launched this podcast, actually. And there was no, you know, interaction there, which is fine. That's what they're using their account for. It really is a way of just people who are using that platform getting the table of contents who maybe don't subscribe to the emails. Whereas there are some society journals, maybe, or other journals in sciences broadly that are very active on Twitter, have very active social media presence, and because of that, have a much greater following.
In this vein, how many people are following SCL on Twitter?
That is a good question. I'm not sure off the top of my head.
And while you look it up as an executive, you know, how big a deal is the Twitter account from the point of view of SCL for outreach?
It's huge. It is the by far the – so SCL, I quickly typed it in. Well, it wasn't actually that quick by the time I had to figure out what the Twitter is, which is can_limnology, has 3,800 followers. And it is by far the main method by which we publicize things related to the SCL. And have for a long time as well. What's that?
I'm just looking at, I pulled it up as well. And so see that they have put out 12,000 tweets.
Mm-hmm. And it has been for a really long time, the main mechanism for SCL to reach out to its members. And that started with, I think it started with Mike Rennie when he was the English communications officer, and continues with both of the communications officers now. So we've built up this following. A lot of that following was built up during the ELA, Save ELA, I don't want to call them debates, but the Save ELA campaign. And because of that, we have a fair number of followers that aren't Canadian limnologists. So we're not preaching to the people who are just there for the journal table of contents. We're getting a lot of different stuff, and it's used to publicize work by other Canadian limnologists. We do a lot of like retweeting. I don't do any of it. Andrea and Francois do a lot of retweeting of things like that. We use it to poll people. It's very active. And I think that, you know, that comes from people who are really savvy with Twitter. So Mike Rennie, who is a great user of Twitter for his own work, but also really brought the SCL into the Twitter sphere. And Andrea Kirkwood, who is doing a lot of the tweeting now on her personal account, has that many people, and well, her personal and lab research account. So she's a very active user of Twitter, and they just bring that, like, you know, that energy associated with using that platform. And it is a big amount of work to do that part of it. It's, you know, for example, when some years ago now, I'm not even sure how many years ago, for the Canadian Quaternary Association, Jenny, who was on our podcast a little while ago, she's a counselor for one of the different districts. And after the meeting, there was a suggestion, hey, why doesn't CANQUA have a Twitter account? So we created one. And I, in theory, run it. but
8,000 followers was that?
Not that many. CANQUA has 269 followers and has made 120 tweets since I set it up in August 2015. So, you know, that's what a society of, it's a little bit smaller than SCL, so it's not directly comparable, but it's in the same vein. But for someone who has no social media background and really hasn't put any time into it at all, you know, that's the kind of difference we're talking about. For what I would use it for is to talk, you know, around the meetings, I sent a few tweets out. I took pictures at the last meeting in Ottawa. But beyond that, I really don't use it much. It's on my phone. I get announcements, you know, I get a notification when someone follows us, I follow them back. If someone tags us, CANQUA in it, I'll retweet it or whatever it is. But beyond that, don't really do a lot to proactively engage with the community, and just hasn't had the time. I haven't had the time. And that's the difference really between 3,800 followers and 270 followers.
And another thing, I don't know if you'd be able to give any answers, but just at what point, when you grow outside your bubble, do you start dealing with trolls?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. It definitely happens. I'm not sure I've ever heard of, maybe they just wouldn't complain about it, they just block those people or ignore them, there ever being an issue with the SCL account and trolls. But, you know, at some point it certainly comes up, whether they're actual people who are trolling, whether they're bots or any of that.
Or it's politically...
Yeah. It probably depends on what you're talking about. You know, you could have a fairly small following. You get a few big retweets by people who are followed by people with accounts that are trying to say more negative things, and you could quickly encounter their, I don't want to say wrath, but their annoyance.
I wonder if the GOPL had a Twitter account when the Jesus walking on the Sea of Galilee paper came out. It would have caused a stir.
It might have. Yeah, I doubt they did. Was it? What did we say? It was 2006 when that paper came out, so probably yeah,
that
not.
That predates Twitter, I think. Twitter's yeah. Like 08, I think. 08, 09, yeah. Something like that.
So maybe not, but we'll never know, I guess.
Okay. So I think one of the takeaways from this exercise is we need to improve our own use of this. And I guess, theoretically, anyone listening to this brainstorming session, I've seen a couple of like lists put out there of what you want to do if you did want to grow your social media following. And
would we say that one of them is pass it off to your co-host because Josh has been shown to be a poor social media coordinator for
So this is one of the big ironies because I thought you were the man of the hour because you had like triple my Twitter followers.
Yeah, I don't
maybe
know
we should share the duties.
Yeah, that probably makes more sense. And actually, that's not a bad thing to say about it because if you do have that opportunity, you know, two people can do twice as much. So that's a big part of it.
Yeah, especially with the, I'm not a big Twitter guy, but I definitely can see how you can spend a lot of time in that black hole perusing the feed. Like, yep. I don't follow very many people, but already, you know, the feed fills up faster than I could ever look at everything on it.
Oh, I follow almost 1,000 people, and I would never get to the end of my feed, like to things I've seen before. Even if I check it every 2 hours, there's no way I'm going to get back to the things I saw at the beginning of the last surf through the feed. Yeah.
So I guess we got to get better at self-promotion.
Yep.
Because no one else is going to do it for us. Not even our mums, who are our primary listeners at this point.
Yep. Which is, I guess that's kind of what we use it for primarily, right? Our Twitter account is used to announce
the release of episodes.
The release of episodes. And primarily I use it that, because I think most people who are listening now are getting it through their RSS feeds on, you know, they've subscribed to the podcast for our regular listeners. I use it mostly to show off the memes that Adam creates for the episodes because they show up nicely in the Twitter feed.
I think it's so few, this is one of those things where social media is hard. There's been a couple where I've gone, someone's going to get a comment. And I guess if you build it, they will come, but we're just going to keep building it.
I really hope that the episode that's about to release, well, I say tomorrow, but the 16th episode, I really hope that the meme gets some love on that one because it's by far my favorite. When Adam sent it to me and I showed up on my phone when he sent it to me in a message, I like showed it to Jay like, look at this. This is amazing. Yeah. She's like, who is that in that picture?
I showed it to former grad student. I guess it's primarily showing my age a little bit in the meme selection or meme image selection. But her general reaction was, I don't get it. Is that supposed to be funny? Is that who is that guy?
It makes me so sad. You'll all know. I mean, you'll have seen the image, hopefully. And if not, when you hear this, and you're like, what the heck are they talking about? Search out the image for the 16th episode and you'll hopefully be able to partake of our enjoyment of it.
Yeah. We find it funny.
Yeah. And really that is part of it. Like in some ways you are, growing your presence and connecting and all those things are really important, but you have to enjoy it. And that's one of the reasons that maybe I'm not as good about it is I don't love spending tons of time commenting on social media. I use it as a way of collecting news and, you know, seeing different things, but beyond that, it's not really my thing. But if you really want to promote, and grow your connections, You really need to be engaged with that audience. Like, you need to talk to people on Twitter all the time, every day. It's not just about putting out the episode every 2 weeks and putting that cool picture. You know, you really need to engage with all of the other tweeps out there in your own field in order to get your presence in the conversation to be seen.
And to break out of your bubble into other bubbles, because this is something we've talked about before, where there seems to be no real rhyme or reason in terms of the impressions of a particular tweet, in terms of the actual content. It really comes down to the number of retweets, like not necessarily the likes. And it all comes down to retweets with comments. And then all of a sudden you see the impressions go up by orders of magnitude. And so not only of your own stuff, but if you want to give somebody else a boost, hint, hint, that is how you do so, right? In your Twitter thing is, and I don't like doing it either. I'm very much of the lurking kind of Twitter user, like browsing it, not really making a whole lot of comments and anything. But if someone does something that they shared, that's the way that the audience is built, because it's an exponential network effect, really. That's the whole point of it in the first place.
Exactly. Yeah, I have so many likes in my liked folder that I used to do it as a way of collecting things that I wanted to go back to, you know, likes are not endorsements kind of idea. But it got to the point where I was liking everyone's research and tweets and that kind of thing so much that it became useless. And thank God I figured out that you can bookmark tweets. So that's where I put the core stuff that I must go back to from teaching or research or whatever. But I'm not, for whatever reason, I don't like to quote tweet things, retweet and with a quote, even though it would be nice to be say, this is so cool research. This really fits nicely. I just don't get around to doing it. And I think that would be a big difference. So my way of like connecting on social media is, likes and follows. And I follow a lot of people. That's a start, but it's not necessarily the best way to go about it. And you could do better than that. And by really amplifying, and I always mean to try, but there's always something else in the way, really amplifying other people's work is a great way to grow your own, connections. And eventually that leads to people seeing your own material. You know, you need to support the community.
So in the same vein, do you use hashtags very much?
Not really.
Do hashtags matter, do you think?
I don't know.
I know our hashtag game is particularly weak.
I've never used one, I don't think.
I think we throw paleolim or paleonology or something in a lot of the episodes.
I do on my Instagram tweets. Well, actually, the dog's Instagram account is far more active than my own. So I use them there, but no, never on Twitter.
So I very passive. So I just see what comes through the feed based on who I follow. I guess every now and then I would click on a hashtag if it pops up in the trending window of, you know, like whatever the top two or three in Canada or whatever that window is on the panel.
Yep.
And so, oh, what is that? And what? Because that's obviously what's big. But in terms of actually searching, I guess it is a thing, and probably within science Twitter and, you know, hashtag SciComm and all that kind of stuff. But it's not something I particularly use myself.
The only one I can think of ever searching for is a specific conference. So like if you want to find tweets associated, because that's when my Twitter, if you were to track my Twitter use, it would massively increase when I'm at a conference, because you're there, right? And you got your phone and you're working away at it. So I would type in, that would be the only time I'd ever like search. So hashtag AGU 2019 for the American Geophysical Union, or hashtag SELCCFFR 2019 in order to follow along with that.
Hashtag pals.
Hashtag pals. Yep. Exactly. That's the only time I ever actively use or look for hashtags, because I think in a lot of cases, the ones that I see are pretty generic. So if you hashtag SciComm, you're going to get thousands of tweets. They're going to be ranked by the most popular by default. And, you know, those could be from some time ago that have just been massively amplified by other people. So I think that's the best example I can think of where I've actually followed along with those. And those are actually good examples.
Did we use hashtags on that little thing a month or two ago where we were trying to make paleolimno memes a thing?
I'm not sure if the paleolimno, that was Beth Hundy came up with that, did she not? Or was it Josh Couric? I can't remember. But I'm not sure if paleolimno memes was hashtagged.
It's totally hashtagged.
Well, that's cool.
Well, there are three hashtags with it. One of which nice. Is me. But yeah, it was Beth, Roberto, and Josh, I think, was a conversation. But again, mm-hmm. that would be like the extent of my messing around with hashtags in a science sense. Yeah, so I guess, you know, concluding this brainstorming session / episode, I'm not sure exactly where one began and the other ended.
Yeah, well, we've talked about it all. it's an interesting thing to think about, for sure.
Yeah, like in many ways, social media sucks, but it's, you know, an integral part of the world that we live in. And on a personal level, I want to use it better. Well, maybe not personal. Related to the podcast, I'm really not super keen on building my own social media brand in any way, shape, or form. I'm cool with being very much on the periphery. You know, a couple months into doing this and producing what I think is some good stuff, it's pretty obvious it doesn't happen on its own. It's a lot, some serious work is required to build an audience.
Yeah, definitely. That is by far, in all the interactions I've had, mostly with people who do it really well and I can compare myself against, is that it's not something that happens on its own. There is a great deal of work that goes into making those connections, and it's not done quickly necessarily. If you get that viral tweet that goes super popular all over the place, people will follow you like crazy, but they're not really going to be engaged with it. They may unfollow, or you're just in that list of thousands of accounts that they follow. To really build those strong connections takes time, and it takes effort, and it really has to be something that you work towards, or you're just naturally really good at, and that's where you put your focus into your connections.
All right. So I guess we will build upon that going forward.
Yeah, no, it's definitely something that I was thinking this as I tweeted the last episode about for the core ideas about the words on paper, and that some of the things that you can write for like the podcast account can be a little bit more silly in some ways than I would tend to write in my own account. So there's a potential to use other platforms to share things that you might not on your personal one. That I find a little bit more enticing in some ways. I think I'd be more likely to really start to engage via our podcast Twitter account than via my own in some ways, because, you know, you're hidden a little bit. Hey, was that Adam or Josh who's tweeting that? Oh, it doesn't matter. It's those guys, right?
Right now, it's always been Josh, but Adam shall wade into those waters soon.
Which would be great. We can kind of listen to a bit of our advice that we've gleaned from others' activities. And that's something to keep in mind. So, like, you know, if you're a PI in a research lab, and you know, you may not have your own social media account, but one of your students may want to publicize the work of the lab. So in Jenny's lab, Jenny has her own Twitter account, and then there's a Carosi lab Twitter that she has. I don't think she knows what the password to that is. It's done by the students, and they publicize all of the stuff, and they're really good at social media. So I don't think they have as many followers as she does yet, but they've only just started. They have an Instagram account for the lab. That's kind of a parallel of that. So utilize that.
You know? Kind of a scary thing, though. That's a real Jesus take the wheel kind of vibe to it all.
Grace, if you're listening, take care with the... No, she's staying for a PhD, so she's got a few years to be locked into that role.
Okay.
But you know, they're way more active on Twitter than from a like publicizing papers and that kind of stuff, even with fewer followers than our personal accounts. Okay. So yeah, you know, it takes a team, you know, it takes a village. If it's the lab, you share it around, and that might be a opportunity if you're not so keen on doing it all yourself, or, you know, if not, and it is your personal account you're trying to work through, then hopefully some of these things about don't do like Josh and Adam will be a little bit helpful.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you want to contact us, we are at Core Ideas Paleo, P-A-L-E-O, on Twitter. We'll definitely reply. That's one thing I would say is if people tweet at us, we're in the game. We just don't initiate the conversations. And that's the step to really improving the output, is to start the conversation. Because just jumping into it is fine. But, you know, if you want to really be involved, you have to initiate sometimes too.
Okay. So, yeah. So on our Twitter feed link page, you'll find a link to our actual website, which is at coreideas.ajezyorski.ca. And that's where we host all the show notes and all of the memes I've made to date. And I don't think... At this point, I'm not sure if all of them actually made it onto Twitter. It's time to start disseminating them a little bit better.
Yeah, I think they most of them did. We skipped the 13th episode because it's bad luck. No, it was right in the middle of all the Black Lives Matter. And there was more important stuff on Twitter than our silly pictures. But they are on the website. But beyond that, I think they are all on there.
Okay. All right. Well... And, oh, let me check the mailbag. No, it's nothing in the mailbag this week. Okay. So, but yes, again, the best way to get in touch with us is through Twitter, Core Ideas Paleo. And until next time, thank you for listening. And we hope this one's been a little bit different, a little more rambly, but we hope you've enjoyed listening to it. It's been kind of a fun, low-key one from our point of view.
Perfect. Take care out there, and we'll catch you next time.
See ya.